Hello and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a featured original research article by Denny et al., Pediatric Emergency Department Care for Septic Shock in Sub-Saharan Africa, Single-Center Outcomes Before versus After Implementation of a Telesimulation Program, from 2023 to 2024. Objectives. Sepsis is a leading cause of preventable death in low-resource settings where delays in recognition and emergency department treatment are common. Limited access to training also contributes to poor outcomes. We hypothesize that a contextualized telesimulation and debriefing program would be associated with better sepsis-related outcomes and time-critical care processes in children presenting to our center in Kumasi, Ghana. We also determined the program's acceptability and feasibility in our clinical providers. Design. We conducted a 12-month mixed-method quasi-experimental before versus after implementation study at Komfo Anokye Teaching Hospital from 2023 to 2024. Pediatric emergency department providers completed 30-minute low-bandwidth telesimulation sessions using culturally adapted real patient videos filmed in the local Ghanaian hospital. Clinical outcomes and care processes were evaluated pre- and post-intervention. Trained observers recorded time-critical interventions, shock recognition, oxygen use, IV access, fluid bolus, reassessment, blood cultures, and antibiotics. Acceptability and feasibility were assessed using validated surveys. Setting: tertiary academic hospital with 1,200 beds, including 15 pediatric emergency department beds and 4 PICU beds. Participants: emergency department healthcare providers, as well as clinical data from patients 2 months to 14 years old, screened at triage for suspected sepsis or septic shock. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Post versus pre-implementation care periods had mortality of 7 of 67, or 10%, versus 25 of 70, or 36%, which represents an associated decrease in odds ratio of death of 0.2, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.1 to 0.5 and a p-value equal to 0.001. The post versus pre-implementation changes in care characteristics included greater odds of supplemental oxygen use with an odds ratio of 2.4, a 95% confidence interval of 1 to 5.7, and a p-value equal to 0.044, and IV placement with an odds ratio of 3.8, a 95% confidence interval of 1.3 to 13.1, and a p-value equal to 0.012. Also, among trainees, 44 of 45 agree that the program was acceptable and feasible. Conclusions. In our 2023 to 2024 pre versus post implementation study, we found that contextualized telesimulation and debriefing were associated with lower odds of mortality, improved characteristics of care, and were acceptable and feasible to the healthcare system. Abstract 2 is a featured original research article by Teixeira et al. Early central venous to PaCO2 difference in subsequent lactate clearance in shock, prospective pediatric cohort from 2021 to 2022. Objectives: to evaluate early central venous to PaCO2 difference, or delta PCO2, and its correlation with later lactate concentration in pediatric patients with shock. Design: prospective observational study. Setting: 2 medical surgical PICUs in a tertiary care university hospital. Patients: children younger than 18 years old with septic or cardiogenic shock admitted to the PICUs from March 2021 to December 2022. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Demographic, clinical, and outcome data were collected from medical records. Arterial and central venous blood samples were collected simultaneously at PICU admission and 6, 24, and 48 hours after admission to determine delta PCO2, arterial lactate concentration, lactate clearance, and central venous oxygen hemoglobin saturation, or SCVO2. Left ventricle ejection fraction was estimated by echocardiography. 54 patients, 1.1 to 203.1 months old, with a median of 25.2 months old, were included. 43 of 54, or 79.6%, had septic shock, and 11 of 54, or 20.4%, had cardiogenic shock. Patients were divided into 2 groups according to delta PCO2 at 6 hours. The first group included 24 less than or equal to 6 millimeters of mercury, and the second group included 30 greater than 6 millimeters of mercury. The group with delta PCO2 greater than 6 millimeters of mercury compared with the group less than or equal to 6 millimeters of mercury had a higher vasoactive inotropic score and pediatric logistic organ dysfunction score, and there was a higher proportion of patients with low left ventricular ejection fraction, elevated lactate concentrations, reduced lactate clearance, and SCVO2 less than 70%. Delta PCO2 positively correlated with lactate concentrations and negatively correlated with lactate clearance and SCVO2. The delta PCO2 cutoff of 7.5 millimeters of mercury at 6 hours had sensitivity of 0.7, specificity of 0.76, positive predictive value of 0.87, and negative predictive value of 0.54 for predicting lactate clearance less than 10% at 24 hours, with an area under the receiver operating characteristic curve of 0.81 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.69 to 0.91. There were no differences in clinical outcomes between the groups. Conclusions. In pediatric shock, delta PCO2 measured 6 hours after presentation is correlated with subsequent lactate clearance at 24 hours and may serve as an early resuscitation and severity stratification metric. Abstract 3 is a featured original research article by Pitkowski et al. Children from families speaking languages other than English or Spanish, medical complexity, and PICU utilization, single-center retrospective study from 2015 to 2022. Objectives. Children with medical complexity account for a disproportionate share of PICU utilization. Children from families speaking languages other than English face barriers that may influence critical care needs. We sought to evaluate the intersection of language and PICU utilization of children with medical complexity. Design, retrospective cohort study. Setting, large quaternary children's hospital in the United States from 2015 to 2022. Patients, children with medical complexity, defined as having two or more body systems involved in a complex chronic condition, admitted to a children's hospital. Patient family languages categorized as English, Spanish, or languages other than English or Spanish. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We identified 3,096 unique children with medical complexity, 54% male, accounting for 9,297 hospital encounters, with a mean age of 8.2 years. Among patient families, 7.2% had a preferred language other than English, with 2.7% speaking Spanish and 4.6% speaking languages other than English or Spanish. Around one-third or 35% of patients had a PICU admission during at least one encounter. Mixed effects regressions with patient-specific random effects were used to model associations. Languages other than English or Spanish were associated with greater odds of PICU admission, with an adjusted odds ratio of 1.58 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.1 to 2.2, and longer PICU length of stay, with an incidence rate ratio of 2.4 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.7 to 3.5, after adjusting for age, sex, race, child opportunity index, and the number of complex chronic conditions. Conclusions. In patients admitted to our children's hospital from 2015 to 2022, children with medical complexity from families speaking a language other than English or Spanish represented a vulnerable subgroup, with associated greater odds of PICU admission and longer stays. These disparities persisted after accounting for complex chronic conditions and child opportunity index. Timely, language-concordant communication, especially for less common languages, may mitigate aspects of critical care admission in this population. Abstract 4 is a featured original research article by McSherry et al. Real-time assessment of factors impacting prognostic predictions after pediatric cardiac arrest, a single-center prospective study. Objectives. Children who suffer cardiac arrest are at risk of mortality and morbidity, with survivors often experiencing a severe decline in neurobehavioral function. Despite challenges in neuroprognostication, providers frequently make predictions regarding patient recovery that influence outcomes. We aim to determine the clinical factors providers report using in real time to predict patient survival and neurologic outcomes at discharge, and how these factors differ by provider and patient characteristics and time from arrest. Design, single-center prospective observational study. Setting, the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia PICU over 12 months from 2023 to 2024. Patients included children resuscitated from in-hospital cardiac arrest and out-of-hospital cardiac arrest who received post-arrest care in the PICU. Subjects included multidisciplinary providers of post-cardiac arrest patients. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Multidisciplinary team members completed questionnaires on post-arrest days 1, 2, 3, and 7, eliciting demographic data and factors used to form their prediction. Descriptive statistics summarized patient characteristics, provider demographics, and survey data. Mixed effect models explored changes in factors used for the prediction of patient discharge outcome over survey time points, as well as differences by provider and patient characteristics. Overall, there were 64 patients with a median age of 4.1 years and an interquartile range of 1.2 to 9.4 years with 60% out-of-hospital cardiac arrest and 55% pre-arrest pediatric cerebral performance category equal to 1 who were analyzed. 548 questionnaires were completed by 245 unique providers. Across all time points, baseline neurologic function and clinical neurologic examination were the most frequently reported factors used to inform prognosis. Use of intra-arrest factors decreased, while reliance on neuromonitoring and neuroimaging increased over time. Factor use varied by provider discipline and patient and arrest characteristics. Conclusions. Prognostic predictions after pediatric cardiac arrest were dynamic and influenced by both patient characteristics and provider discipline. Future efforts should aim to understand how the integration of patient data impacts prognostic accuracy and clarify how prognostic impressions shape communication and decision-making with caregivers. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation by Sawyer et al. Increasing reliability and timeliness of appropriate genetic counseling consultation in the pediatric cardiac ICU, single-center quality improvement study from 2020 to 2024. Objectives. Cardiovascular genetics evaluation in the cardiac ICU is essential for patient and family care. However, engaging genetic counseling consultation by frontline care teams in the cardiac ICU is challenging. This quality improvement project aimed to 1. Increase genetic counseling consultations for eligible cardiac ICU patients, 2. Decrease time from admission to consultation, and 3. Assess whether changes aligned with parental preferences. Design, single-center quality improvement study from January 2020 to June 2024. Setting, large tertiary care children's hospital in the United States. Patient cohort, 265 patients with congenital heart defects. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. In 2022, we introduced a standardized admissions process for admissions with congenital heart disease, including electronic medical record or EMR notifications, accurate diagnostics, improved referral workflow in collaboration with fetal cardiology clinic, and parent surveys. A before versus after analysis showed an associated increase in genetic counseling consultation from 76% to 94%. The mean time from admission to consultation decreased from 6 to 3 days. Post-introduction, there was reduced variability and less delay compared with pre-implementation. A needs assessment survey via a parent support group had 151 responses, which indicated that 83% of families wanted genetic testing. 69% of families wanted to discuss genetic testing through in-person consultation during their child's initial inpatient admission. 32% of families preferred contact as soon as possible, and 47% preferred contact before cardiac surgery. Last, 75% of parents with a fetal diagnosis of congenital heart disease expressed interest in discussing testing while pregnant. Conclusions. In our pre versus post introduction of a quality improvement intervention, we found that eligible cardiac ICU patients are more reliably and promptly identified for genetic counseling consultation by leveraging the EMR and partnering with cardiac ICU staff and fetal cardiology. Parent-supported genetic testing, typically delivered through integrated genetic counseling consultation in both the fetal and inpatient settings. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation by Seps et al. Long-term risk of chronic kidney disease after continuous renal replacement therapy in critically ill children, single-center PICU cohort in Sweden from 2008 to 2021. Objective. Continuous renal replacement therapy, or CRRT, is the preferred method of kidney support for critically ill children with severe acute kidney injury, AKI, or fluid overload. The number of survivors after pediatric CRRT is increasing, but there are insufficient data describing the risk of developing chronic kidney disease, or CKD, in these patients. Design: a register-based study from a tertiary multidisciplinary hospital from 2008 to 2021. Setting: PICU patients 18 years or younger treated with CRRT due to AKI or fluid overload at Karolinska University Hospital from 2008 to 2021 were included. Detailed PICU data from PICU survivors were combined with data from the Swedish National Patient Register, aiming to investigate the long-term risk of chronic kidney disease development. Secondary outcomes included risk of hypertension, end-stage renal disease, and mortality. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We identified and included 156 PICU survivors with a mean follow-up time of 6.4 years and a standard deviation of 3.2. Chronic kidney disease developed in 19 of 156, or 12.2% of patients, resulting in an incidence of 18.9 cases per 1,000 person years, with a 95% confidence interval of 11.4 to 29.6. Median time to chronic kidney disease diagnosis was 11.5 months, with an interquartile range of 3 to 62.5. Hypertension occurred in 17 of 156 patients, or 10.9%, and the composite outcome of chronic kidney disease or hypertension in 28 of 156 patients, or 17.9%. The incidence of post-PICU mortality was 6 per 1,000 person years, with a 95% confidence interval of 2.2 to 13.1. In multivariable analysis, CRRT duration and estimated glomerular filtration rate at hospital discharge were associated with chronic kidney disease development, with both having a p-value equal to 0.02. We failed to identify an association between age at CRRT initiation or PICU illness and subsequent development of chronic kidney disease. Conclusions. In our center in Sweden from 2008 to 2021, we found that a significant proportion of children surviving critical illness requiring CRRT are subsequently diagnosed with chronic kidney disease or hypertension over time, demonstrating that rigorous follow-up of PICU patients undergoing CRRT is warranted. Abstract 7 is a clinical investigation by Gillette et al. Discontinuation of routine surveillance cultures during extracorporeal membrane oxygenation in pediatric patients, a single center before versus after experience from 2022 to 2025. Objectives: to evaluate our before versus after change in practice of stopping routine surveillance cultures in pediatric patients supported with extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO, by examining patient outcomes, reviewing antimicrobial prescription, and costs. Design: retrospective before versus after study. Setting: PICU, neonatal ICU, and cardiac ICU in a quaternary children's hospital. Patients included critically ill patients younger than 18 years supported on ECMO between October 2022 and March 2025. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Patients supported on ECMO in the 12 months following the practice change in March 2024 were compared with the same number of ECMO patients from before the practice change, 47 in each group. Removal of routine daily blood culture and every other day urine and respiratory culture orders in ECMO order sets was associated with a reduction in cultures obtained. It went from a mean of 1.8 with a standard deviation plus or minus 0.22 to a mean of 0.4 with a standard deviation plus or minus 0.19 per ECMO day, with a p-value less than 0.0001. We failed to identify an associated change in average ECMO run duration, 211 versus 181 hours, with a p-value equal to 0.48, or 30-day mortality, 15 of 47 versus 15 of 47. There was an associated decrease in antimicrobial prescriptions, quantified as a percentage of all ECMO days with prescription, 366 of 414, or 88%, versus 247 of 356, or 69%, with a mean difference of 19%, a 95% confidence interval of the difference of 13 to 25%, and a p-value equal to 0.002. We estimate that using 2024 prices, there was a cost reduction of $136,000 in the 12 months following the change in practice. Conclusions: our experience of introducing in March 2024 a change in using surveillance or scheduled cultures in pediatric ECMO patients in our center is that there was an associated reduction in microbiology cultures, improved antimicrobial stewardship, and cost savings. In comparison with our experience before the change in practice, we failed to identify any associated negative effects such as increased duration of ECMO support or 30-day survival. Abstract 8 is a clinical investigation by Chen et al. Pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome after cardiopulmonary bypass for congenital heart disease surgery. Postoperative changes in endothelial glycocalyx degradation. Objectives. We have investigated postoperative dynamic changes in endothelial glycocalyx, or EG, degradation markers in infants who have undergone cardiopulmonary bypass for congenital heart disease surgery, and related the observations to the development of pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome. Design: single-center prospective case control study from June to December 2024. Setting: 20-bed pediatric cardiac ICU in a tertiary hospital in China. Patients: overall, 45 infants with an age range from 121 to 351 days undergoing non-emergent cardiopulmonary bypass for congenital heart disease were recruited. 15 with pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome and 30 matched non-pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome cases. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome patients in comparison with non-pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome patients had higher glycocalyx degradation markers at CICU admission, or T1. Syndican 1, 199.2 plus or minus 22.1 versus 118 plus or minus 6.2 nanograms per milliliter with a p-value less than 0.05. Heparin sulfate 105.7 plus or minus 11.9 versus 79.1 plus or minus 6.8 nanograms per milliliter with a p-value less than 0.05, and hyaluronic acid 53.6 plus or minus 10.5 versus 40.4 plus or minus 4.7 nanograms per milliliter with a p-value less than 0.05. Biomarkers were highest at T1, fell at postoperative day 1 or T2, and returned to baseline by day 5 or T3 in both groups, with levels consistently higher in pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome infants. The pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome group also had longer median duration of mechanical ventilation, 48 versus 24 hours with a p-value less than 0.001, as well as CICU stay, 7 versus 4 days, and hospital stay, 18.5 versus 12 days, with T1 biomarker levels correlated with duration of mechanical ventilation, with an R value equal to 0.52 to 0.68 and CICU length of stay R equal to 0.61 to 0.71, all with p-values less than 0.05. Conclusions. In congenital heart disease infants admitted to the CICU after surgery involving cardiopulmonary bypass, pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome cases exhibit an associated endothelial glycocalyx injury. Monitoring of the peak levels of degradation markers, including syndican 1, heparin sulfate, and hyaluronic acid at admission to the cardiac ICU may help identify those at most risk of pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome. Abstract 9 is a PCCM trial by Lim Preyun et al. Effect of adjunctive train of 4 monitoring using peripheral nerve stimulation on neuromuscular blocking agent dose in PICU patients. A randomized crossover study. Objective: continuous neuromuscular blocking agent infusion is common in the PICU. There are no pediatric trials evaluating the effect of train of 4 monitoring on neuromuscular blocking agent dosing. We therefore aim to determine the effect of adjunctive train of 4 monitoring using peripheral nerve stimulation on neuromuscular blocking agent dosing compared with clinical assessment alone in PICU patients. Design: randomized crossover study. Setting: 14-bed general PICU. Patients, age 30 days to 18 years, who received continuous cisatricurium infusion and were expected to continue the infusion for the next 48 hours. Interventions. Patients were randomized to start day 1 intervention with either adjunctive train of 4 or clinical assessment. Crossover occurred each morning between adjunctive train of 4 and clinical assessment. On adjunctive Train-of-4 day, patients received Train-of-4 monitoring, and the results were reported to the clinical team. The clinical team used Train-of-4 results together with clinical assessment on the depth of paralysis to adjust the saturcurium dosing on adjunctive Train-of-4 days. On the clinical assessment day, patients received Train-of-4 monitoring, but the results were concealed from the clinical team. The clinical team used only clinical assessment of the depth of paralysis to adjust the saturcurium dosing on the clinical assessment day. Measurements and main results. Pairwise comparison was made between the consecutive adjunctive Train-of-4 day and clinical assessment day in the same patient. 16 patients completed the study. There were no significant differences on adjunctive Train-of-4 day versus clinical assessment day for total daily sesatrocurium dose, with a median of 34 mg in an interquartile range of 20 to 72.8 versus 35.4 mg with an interquartile range of 16.8 to 59 and a p-value equal to 0.87, and for average sesatrocurium dose. The mean was 2.36 plus or minus a standard deviation of 1.21 micrograms per kilogram per minute versus 2.41 plus or minus 1.35 micrograms per kilogram per minute, with a mean difference of negative 0.06, a 95% confidence interval of negative 0.22 to 0.11 micrograms per kilogram per minute, and a p-value equal to 0.48. Conclusions. Adjunctive Train-of-4 monitoring did not lead to significant difference in sesatrocurium dosing compared with clinical assessment alone. This concludes the abstracts for the July 2026 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Journal.